The headlines: the death toll in Gaza nears 33,900 as intense Israeli attacks claim dozens of more lives. U.S. police make arrest says Google workers protest Gaza genocide in their company's contract with Israel. And also in our headlines, the Iranian president says his country's punitive military action against Israel was limited and calculated. Hello and welcome, everybody. More deaths and destruction in Gaza, where the Israeli regime continues its intense attacks against civilians.
Like the rest of Rafah residents, we were shocked when an Israeli rocket hit a house of displaced people. My sister's son-in-law, her daughter, and her children were having dinner when an Israeli missile demolished their house over their heads.
I woke up to the sound of girls shouting mama and children calling each other's names. I came running and found children coming out running. We were stumbling upon bodies of martyrs, with body parts and corpses scattered all over the place, inside the shop and out there.
At least 13 Palestinians were killed in an Israeli airstrike in Gaza City. They are among 56 people killed in the past 24 hours. The total death toll from the U.S.-Israeli genocide in Gaza now stands at nearly 33,900. Most of the victims are women and children. The Gaza health system has almost collapsed as hospitals are main targets of the attacks. Meanwhile, almost the entire population of Gaza are struggling to get access to food amid Israeli restrictions on humanitarian aid into the besieged territory. Moti Abu Mosabe is joining us now from Deir al-Bala in central Gaza to bring us up to speed on the continued Israeli genocidal onslaught on Palestinians in Gaza. Moti, what do you have to share with us from today?
Yes, Bardia, actually the Israeli attacks and the Israeli strikes were maintained indefinitely against different areas of Gaza Strip. As you have mentioned, that according to Gaza's health ministry statement, in terms of the updates of this genocidal war on Gaza, the Israeli occupation forces committed at least five appalling massacres against the Palestinian people, claiming the lives of roughly 56 Palestinian civilians, in addition to injuring roughly 84 others. These numbers are still high, and they are taking the whole number of the Palestinian civilians who have been killed and slaughtered since the beginning of this onslaught on Gaza to roughly 33,899 Palestinians, while the injuries became 76,644 others. These numbers are still incrementally increasing with the continuous and the maintained Israeli attacks against different areas of Gaza Strip. Over the last night, the Israeli occupation forces carried out a ground offensive against the eastern outer skirt of Deir al-Balah city. This attack is still underway. Till this moment, as we speak right now, we can hear the bombardments and the explosions booming right now in that area as the Israeli tanks are still attacking that area. Dozens of the Palestinian residential buildings were completely destroyed, while another medicine factory was also destroyed over those relentless and ceaseless Israeli strikes and attacks. The current situation is still tense there. In the same context, when it comes to Al-Nusayrat refugee camp in the central area of Gaza Strip, particularly the northern part of the camp, it is still under the heavy bombardments and attacks of the Israeli occupation forces. We are talking about roughly seven consecutive days with these heavy and vehement Israeli airstrikes and artillery shelling. Hundreds of the Palestinian residential buildings were completely destroyed and leveled to the ground over those vehement and cruel attacks. Needless to mention that Al-Nusayrat refugee camp is considered as one of the most densely populated camps and areas across all areas of Gaza Strip. Dozens of the Palestinian casualties were left behind those attacks, and this number is highly expected to rise with these continuous attacks against that area. In the same context, when it comes to Gaza City, as you know, that at least 13 Palestinian civilians were reportedly killed after the Israeli fighter drones attacked a group of the Palestinian civilians who were gathering near a place in order to get an access to the internet. The Israeli occupation forces attacked them point blank without any warnings, without any justification, without any reason. 13 Palestinian civilians were reportedly killed over that attack. In the meantime, in the same city, in Gaza City, Al-Zaytun neighborhood was also under heavy and intense Israeli airstrikes and attacks, particularly the southern and the eastern parts of Al-Zaytun neighborhood. Knowing that this neighborhood was subjected to, as you know, to a brutal ground offensive, which was carried out against that neighborhood over the last couple of months, claiming the lives of hundreds of the Palestinian people and destroying hundreds of the Palestinian residential buildings and house units. While when it comes to the northern part of Gaza City, as you know, the Israeli occupation forces actually withdrew after 48 hours of the attack that was carried out against Beit Hanun City. As you know, the Israeli occupation forces surrounded several schools which were taking shelter by the displaced Palestinians there. They kidnapped dozens of the Palestinian men and the Palestinian young men, actually inflicting more destruction in that destroyed city. While moving to the southern part of Gaza Strip, particularly Rafah City, another appalling massacre was committed after the Israeli warplanes carried out several airstrikes against Yebna neighborhood. Yebna is considered as one of the most densely populated areas in Rafah City. Needless to mention that Rafah is still completely overwhelmed and overcrowded with hundreds of thousands of the Palestinian civilians. At least, as you know, that at least 8 Palestinian civilians were reportedly killed over that attack. So we are talking about continuous Israeli airstrikes that are still claiming more lives of the Palestinian civilians and inflicting more death and destruction in all areas of Gaza Strip amid the catastrophic humanitarian conditions that are still hitting the people here in the Gaza Strip.
Thanks a lot, Moti Abu Musabbeh, joining us from Deir al-Balah in central Gaza. Moving on, Israel's months of genocidal war on the Gaza Strip has not only left tens of thousands of Palestinians dead, but displaced more than 1.7 million others. Most displaced people are in Rafah, a southern city that remains under constant threats of an Israeli invasion. People there say that a ground operation in Rafah will leave them nowhere to go. Let's hear the reaction of a few of them.
It will be a huge problem if ground invasion takes place in Rafah. You can see more than 1.5 million people in Rafah. Where can they go? We can barely find space for each other. Every tent hosts 6, 4, or 3 families instead of one. The least you can find is 2 families inside a tent.
Of course, we are scared, terrified, and whoever says he's not afraid is lying. We can't go anywhere. Mawasi refugee camp can't take more people, neither Rafah. Geographically, it can't take more. We are really worried.
My husband is in Hebron, and I have no one, only me and my children. We are scared if an invasion takes place in Rafah. Where can we go? We are more than 20 people. I really dream about going back to my home. I wish I can go back to my apartment, even if it is rubble now. I'll stay in a tent there, but at my place. We are emotionally devastated.
For me, it's a great tragedy. My children are emotionally unstable because we were hit by an F-16 in Gaza. My husband was martyred in the beginning of the war. We fled to Khan Yunis. We didn't get to stay for a month and a half. Israeli forces dropped leaflets on us, and the whole area where I was staying was damaged. Again, we fled to Rafah, but there's no way to go after that. Where can we go? My children are devastated all the time.
Dozens of employees of the American tech giant Google have demonstrated in front of the company's building, demanding the end of cooperation with the Israeli regime over its massacre of Palestinians.
Free Palestine!
Free Palestine!
Free Palestine!
Free Palestine!
We demand that Google drop Project Nimbus, the $1.2 billion contract between them and Israel. We demand that Google protect their Arab, Muslim, and Palestinian worker voices from harassment, retaliation, suppression. And we demand that Google recognize Project Nimbus as a workplace safety and health concern.
Several protesters detained as they were demonstrating on Tuesday in Sunnyvale, California. Employees demanded the cancellation of Google's $1.2 billion contract with Israel for a project known as Nimbus. The project is part of Israel's agreement with Amazon and Google to provide cloud computing facilities to the regime and its army. Demonstrators criticized Google for the lack of transparency in announcing the details of the contract. They also said that the Israeli army is using artificial intelligence to kill Palestinians in Gaza. This is not the first time anti-Israel demonstrations are held in the U.S. On Tuesday, a group of pro-Palestine activists blocked the iconic Golden Gate Bridge in San Francisco for hours in solidarity with people in war-torn Gaza. Israeli forces have intensified their violent raids across the occupied West Bank since early October when the regime launched its war on Gaza. Several towns and villages across the occupied territories, including Nablus and Al-Khalil, have witnessed fresh Israeli incursions. The regime's soldiers also made multiple arrests during the raids, which have become daily occurrences. Our correspondent in Ramallah, Mona Kandil, joined us earlier with more details.
The Israeli forces raided Al-Khalil city and stormed the homes of two Palestinian prisoners, Ahmed and Mahmoud Zidat. And those are prisoners, the Israeli military accuses them of carrying out an anti-Israeli operation in Ra'anana, led to the killing and injury of Israeli soldiers back in January. The Israeli troops destroyed the homes of those two Palestinian prisoners, and during this operation in Al-Khalil, the Israeli forces opened fire towards Palestinians and fired tear gas, and a number of Palestinians had suffocated due to inhaling tear gas. Of course, the Israeli forces stormed the village of Beni Naim and arrested at least nine Palestinians there, where exchange of fire and the clashes have taken place between the Palestinians and the Israeli forces. Elsewhere in the occupied West Bank, the Israeli troops this time had raided the town of Aqraba, as well as Tul Karim and the town of Habli, south Falqilia. A number of Palestinians had been arrested in these areas, in addition to storming several neighborhoods and towns in Nablus and around the city of Nablus. And according to the Palestinians, to the Palestinian Commission of Prisoners Affairs, a number of Palestinians had been also arrested in these areas, including ex-prisoners and Palestinian activists, in addition to the fact that people from all walks of life are being arrested by the Israeli forces, including children and women. At least 15 Palestinians and more had been arrested this morning across the occupied West Bank. Today, behind bars, there are over 9,200 Palestinians. Over 3,200 of them are being held under the administrative detention. This means that people are behind bars without charge or trial. They don't know why they had been arrested by the Israeli forces, but yet it's another collective punishment being practiced by the Israeli regime.
Tensions have been flaring up between Israel and Lebanon's Hezbollah resistance movement since the Gaza war began. Both sides keep exchanging fire along the southern Lebanese border. In the latest attacks, Israeli warplanes bombed several villages and towns. Hezbollah also retaliated by firing a barrage of rockets at Israeli military bases located in the occupied territories. Iran's president says a reprisal attack launched on the Israeli military targets in the occupied territories was a calculated move.
The Iranian military punished and reined in the Israeli regime. This shows Iran's power. Today, the whole world admits that what the Iranian armed forces did with the wise Islamic Revolution leader's prudence was not only a true promise coming true, but also a precise and calculated move. Today, it is being acknowledged by the world leaders. It was an extremely calculated move.
President Raisi made the comments in a ceremony in Tehran marking National Army Day. He said that Iran's operation shattered the Tel Aviv regime's hollow power. He said the punitive action was taken on a limited scale just to punish the regime, but if it were a full-blown operation, he added, nothing would have been left of the Tel Aviv regime. He also warned that Israel will receive a harsh response in case of the slightest act of aggression against Iran. The president said Iran's military might can bring security to the whole region. He underlined that hatred toward the United States and Israel, as well as support for the resistance front, has grown more than ever. A senior Iranian military commander says homegrown munitions and military hardware were put on display on National Army Day. In an interview with the Arabic language Al Alam News Network, Brigadier General Qumar Seydari gave the details of the defense equipment showcased. He said drone and missile capabilities, armor-piercing equipment, smart weapons with pinpoint accuracy, and breakthroughs in the field of electronic warfare were among the products paraded in ceremonies marking National Army Day. Haydari then touched upon Iran's reprisal attack on Israeli military targets in the occupied territories. He said the operation was conducted a few days after Israel's terrorist attack on the Iranian embassy in Damascus, only due to political considerations. The general warned that Iran will respond in less than an hour if its interests are targeted again. The Iraqi people and leaders have hailed Iran's retaliatory operation against Israel, which came amid the Tel Aviv regime's war on Gaza. They say the attack was legitimate and within rights to self-defense after the failure of the international community to condemn the deadly Israeli strike on Iran's consulate. Muslim Salim reports from Baghdad.
After days of anticipation, Iran unleashed a barrage of missiles and drones against Israeli targets in the occupied territories. The legitimate response came after Israel attacked Iran's consulate in Damascus on April 1st, violating all international laws and conventions.
Iran's response comes within the international laws, specifically Article 51 of the United Nations Charter, which gives Iran the legitimate right to defend its national security. The Iranian attack on Israel has changed the geopolitical map in the region, and it was a strong warning to the evil regime.
The Iraqi people, as well as resistance leaders, hailed the Islamic Republic for the unprecedented response, dubbed Operation True Promise, which was within the inherent right of self-defense that entitles any country to protect its diplomatic institutions. Iran's retaliation came after the UN Security Council failed to condemn Israel's attack, which killed 7 members of Iran's Islamic Revolution Guards Corps. The significant operation clearly shows that Iran will not hesitate to take action against any threat to its citizens and institutions. Now, with its capabilities and military evolution, Iran has significantly changed the rules of battlefield in modern times.
Iran's retaliatory operation, which came after a long time of strategic patience in the face of Israeli's brutalities, shows that the Tel Aviv regime's days of hit and run are over, and Iran does not hesitate to exact a devastating revenge on its enemy, despite its all-out Western support. Muslim Salim, Baghdad.
Well, that brings us to an end here on this edition of the World News. Bye, everybody.
This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily, round the clock, for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard by the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 31 meters, 9,650 kHz every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Southern Africa can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 25 meters, 11,880 kHz every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our program via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT-5 and IntelSat-39 and via the internet. Our internet address is pasttoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
This is the part of the speech delivered on June 23rd, 2015 by Ayatollah Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution. The Americans acknowledged that sanctions do not have any effect, as was pointed out in this meeting. This is a completely correct analysis. The Americans reached the conclusion that sanctions do not produce the desired effect anymore. Therefore, they pursued other options. We are running out of time and I should discuss matters as quickly as possible. They realized that without dependence on others, we can achieve advanced technologies. We relied on this logic and we entered into the negotiations. Of course, we did not lose caution. From the beginning, we looked with suspicion at the foreign negotiators and the American side. We did not trust them because of our experiences, and therefore, from the beginning, we entered into the negotiations with caution. We believed that if they kept their word, then so much the better. We too were prepared to make concessions.
دنیای اسلام یک نسخه امروز دارد و اون اتحاد.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today. And that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
We do not believe that we should not make any concessions in a negotiation and that we should not make a backward movement on some issues. This was not the case. We were prepared to make some concessions in a reasonable and rational way. However, we were after a good agreement. I should add that both we and the Americans speak about a good agreement, but when we speak about a good agreement, we mean a fair agreement. On the contrary, when the Americans speak about a good agreement, they mean a totalitarian agreement. We had just begun to move forward in the negotiations when their excellencies began to show their greed. Every day they said something new and every day they made a different excuse. Their 6 months became 1 year and it even became longer with the passage of time. Negotiations began to take various forms. It was their haggling and greed that lengthened the negotiations. Besides, They issued threats. They threatened to impose more sanctions. They even threatened to launch military attacks. They issued threats on the table and below the table and other such things. This is how their excellencies have behaved until today.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope. Oh,
citizens under surveillance.
To watch without being seen, that's the spirit of surveillance. It's always present in the citizens' lives, but in the past 10 years, along with the pace of technological advances, we have witnessed a revolution. Targeted surveillance has gradually turned into mass surveillance worldwide. In the past, it only focused on public areas, but now it's violating our privacy. Closing the door or drawing the curtains at home is not enough anymore. The invisible eye is settled in our privacy. Online items and games, activities on social networks, local details of our smartphones, and inquiries on the search engines. Our online life turns into data. The information that when processed makes a new form of identity on which we have no control. Our private life could be laid bare in a matter of moments. This is what we will watch in this preventive film. A few minutes would be enough for four hackers to tap into all this information. This experience is a warning. Our online life doesn't belong to us. Never have we been scrutinized so much. 70% of our calls by mobile phones are recorded. Millions of hours of discussion by webcam are diverted by the secret services. Our existence is now accessible on the internet in the form of databases, and every single detail of our lives is retained in the memories by the storage centers. Who records this valuable information? How is it exploited? And for what purposes? We have conducted a survey for 2 years in Europe and in the United States. We went to meet the experts in digital surveillance, hackers and whistleblowers, and also the web giants such as Google or Facebook, and also the secret services that process and collect our data. As the boundaries between surveillance, technology, and power fade, we will see that the gap is growing between two groups. On one side, defenders of individual freedoms, and on the other, supporters of cyber surveillance. A paradigm shift that can lead the citizens towards a new social model.
I think, you know, our modern societies are facing a choice about the future, and I think it's fundamentally a political choice. I think we could decide through an action to say, well, you know, we don't care very much about this. We don't care very much if the government gathers up all this information. We don't care very much about who has access to it, how it's used. We don't care if our children grow up in such a world of constant surveillance. And I think that could happen.
And it was to protect our privacy that on September 5, 2001, only a few days before the attacks on the World Trade Center and the Pentagon, the European Union was going to adopt the historical sanctions against the United States in order to make it cease the large-scale spying on phone calls and fax messages, and especially to make it give up the establishment of email surveillance. Europe knew that since the Second World War, the NSA, along with the intelligence services of its Anglo-Saxon allies, monitored the old continent under a program called Echelon. The result? The pressure was inflicted anyhow. The prosecutor himself considers that Google, as much as the search engine is concerned, is not responsible for the data processing. Accordingly, Mario's complaint is inadmissible. But the last word in this affair, after being deliberated upon, would be rendered by the judge of the European Court. For the first time, it came to light that the NSA had enlisted large internet groups for surveillance purposes. In this document, there is a list of the companies in all the areas to which the agency can access. The internet has become the main vector of the mass surveillance model, which affects everyone.
Talk about the NSA issue, which obviously caused controversy back home, but also here in Europe. This is not a situation in which we are rifling through the ordinary emails of German citizens or American citizens or French citizens or anybody else. This is not a situation where we simply go into the internet and start searching any way that we want.
Now everyone's personal and private lives and associated transaction and data history becomes the equivalent of secret government property held for years as pre-crime data just in case it is needed in the future.
The policies are the means to block the road of the NSA. Although the European Parliament remains sensitive to the problematic issue of individual liberties, in autumn of 2014, France votes indifferently to the Bill of Military Programming 2014-2019, which makes it possible to monitor every citizen through their online life. Concurrently, this article renews the law on wiretapping adopted in 1991, entered into force in a span of less than a week before the attacks of January 2015. To frame the issue of eavesdropping by the intelligence services, American lawmakers opted for a secret court composed of 12 independent judges. In France, on the contrary, the CNCIS is responsible for verifying the legality of the interception authorizations. It is only accountable in front of the executive power. France is far from the German mobilization about the surveillance. La Quadrature du Net is one of the few French associations actively involved in the European debates.
We can act now and make a difference for ourselves and everyone we know by using free and open source software that belongs to everyone and that we can always control. By switching to decentralized services that make it possible to know where our data is and what happens to it. And by using end-to-end encryption to guarantee that our private communications are, well, private. So let's raise awareness about the impact of global surveillance. And let's ensure that our political leaders protect our privacy and promote technologies that, instead of controlling people, liberate them.
The purpose of the National Commission for Computer and Liberties is to protect our private life. Monitoring the net, the control device, is not satisfactory. During a hearing at the National Assembly, Jean-Marie Delarue, the new CNCIS president, said that the risk is great to see the development of the new, more or less intrusive approaches without any legislation and therefore without any guarantees about the safety interception. What might look like a company whose security mechanism would use the full potentiality of big data?
In the future, my nightmare is that there will be the ability to have a reasonable prediction of what people will do and what attitudes they will hold. And you can imagine in that moment, we will find out that Edward Snowden is likely to disclose information and be a dissident prior to him actually acting. And it doesn't have to be perfect, of course. It never will be. So not only will we catch Edward Snowden, but we'll catch three or four other people prior to them acting. And there we can see a sort of technical totalitarianism. It is very important that we prevent this from happening. Anyone who thinks that this is science fiction is just simply ignorant of history.
Finding the culprit before they commit the crime. This is not science fiction. The world of prediction is appearing. In Santa Cruz, California, a pioneer police unit is already using prediction in order to help the patrols and to maximize the success of their interventions. It is the computer that guides this new form of surveillance. The issue of anticipation is a popular doctrine in military tactics.
Cameras are, I don't think, necessarily an effective deterrent. What they do is they give you information after the crime occurs. For us, we're hoping to mitigate and stop crime before it occurs. We're hoping that we, either by our presence being there, that we encourage crime not to occur, or that if crime does occur, we're there to catch the suspects in the act of that crime. And so we're hoping that with those two things, we actually mitigate the crime before it happens, and you don't need a camera to tell you what happened.
The PredPol project is not a simple production of the local police. It is an innovation by the science department at Santa Clara University.
So PredPol is short for predictive policing. And the idea behind PredPol is we give software directly to the officers in the field to help them do their jobs better. And how we do that is we give them locations and times of the day of areas of the city that are at high risk for criminal incidents to happen, and so they can go into those areas and try to prevent crime before it occurs.
Laid out a map of the city, as you see here, we can see where the crimes have actually occurred and now where PredPol thinks that they will occur. And that's what's different about how we use the data here with the predictive policing model. We're not just looking at yesterday's crime. We want to know, where is today's crime going to happen? And the data, combined with the power of the computer, is able to tell us that.
At PredPol, our algorithms utilize past crime data. So we take in the past 5 to 10 years of a police department's data, and we process that each day, going back from 10 years all the way to crimes that happened yesterday. And then we use that information to predict where crime is likely to happen tomorrow.
A new outlet for the use of data. It is a mathematical view towards the events and the behaviors in order to anticipate the future and reduce the danger.
An officer might only be able to patrol 1% of the city. So our goal at PredPol is to maximize the amount of crime in that 1% of the city so that they can go into those areas and interrupt crime. So you might see, for example, that our algorithms can capture 10 to 15% of crime in that 1% of the city. So you're getting a 10 to 15 times improvement of accuracy over random patrols. So certainly, the data that companies like Google and Facebook are collecting can be used to predict a lot of things. Even probably certain types of criminal incidents, can be predicted by people's Twitter feeds or their Facebook feeds. And certainly other aspects of our lives can be understood in a quantitative way by analyzing the vast amounts of data these companies collect.
The answer is now in the hands of the citizens. Seeking some solutions to face the challenges of a digital world without any boundaries is the subject of the meetings at Chaos Communication Congress. In this hotbed of computer dissent, by mastering the technology, we learn to protect our privacy and to hide ourselves from uncontrollable monitoring. Here, we also think about the society of tomorrow and about defending this ideal, which is more and more abstract, which is democracy.
I don't think we should have to take extraordinary measures to protect our privacy in a free society. We take extraordinary measures in a prison society. That's how people have to communicate, because they live in a world where they know that their actions are always being monitored, and if they step out of line, then they're going to get caught. So they engage in all sorts of tricks to protect their privacy and their communication. That's what we have to avoid. We can't allow ourselves to believe we live in such a world. We have to continue to assert the freedom that people in a democratic society should expect.
The range of the implemented surveillance programs is beyond imagination. It questions the validity of those who are in the shadows. The optic nerve, revealed by The Guardian, is a GCHQ program that has recorded 1.8 million conversations on Yahoo webcams between the individuals in Europe just to test the automatic systems and the biometric facial recognition. The strictest privacy is violated beyond any legal framework. The freedom of the citizens leaves room for the reason of the state.
What I think is completely illegitimate is that he stole so much material of such high sensitivity, and that journalists are now, piece by piece, exposing the inner workings of intelligence agencies. We will all lose. We will all be less secure as a result of that kind of exposure.
In the midst of the turmoil caused by Snowden's revelations, Obama was paying an official visit to Germany. What was within the area of secrecy becomes a public matter. The credibility of the greatest leaders of the planet is at stake.
Talk about the NSA issue, which obviously caused controversy back home, but also here in Europe. This is not a situation in which we are rifling through, you know, the ordinary emails of German citizens or American citizens or French citizens or anybody else. This is not a situation where we simply go into the internet and start searching any way that we want. This is a circumscribed, narrow system directed at us being able to protect our people, and all of it is done under the oversight of the courts.
However, even the German chancellor does not escape the supervision of the NSA.
Whether the French and the Spanish and the German governments simply didn't know that there was wiretapping and intercepting and searching of electronic communications going on, or whether their objections are hypocritical, I think it's probably a mix of both. There's certainly plenty of hypocrisy.
As if nothing had happened in the previous weeks, in January 2014, President Barack Obama limits the monitoring of the NSA in the U.S. while he renews the all-out surveillance programs in the world. A month later, President François Hollande was on an official visit to the United States.
The example of spying on heads of state and heads of government, and then the symbolic gesture of Angela Merkel showing her portable phone, that has two sides. Of course, you cannot you cannot focus on Angela Merkel's phone only, because it's all our phones which are subject to monitoring. And it's not just fixing the problem of whether a certain head of state or 10 or 20 heads of state are or not are followed or not. It's the structural surveillance in our society which needs to be addressed. So I use Angela Merkel's phone as a metaphor for everybody's phone is at stake.
Germany arranges a protest. 25,000 people gather in the venue of the demonstration called Freedom Not Fear. Here, the case of Snowden clarifies the fear of a mass surveillance, which awakens the ghosts of the past. Pataloon, known by his hacker name, created Digital Courage 27 years ago. This is the oldest association fighting for the defense of privacy and data protection in Germany. 13 years after Europe's abortive riposte against Echelon, the U.S. surveillance program for the European citizens, the issue of mass surveillance returns to the front stage of the European Parliament. The institution opened its doors to those who were once regarded as simple protesters.
First round of questions by the rapporteur and the shadows.
The NSA has been guided at every moment by a desire to obscure, evade, sidestep, misinterpret, ignore legal authorities for the purpose of expanding its data collection practices. People concerned about privacy and civil liberties, whether they are in Europe or in the United States, must share an equal concern about that problem.
Now everyone's personal and private lives and associated transaction and data history becomes the equivalent of secret government property, held for years as pre-crime data, just in case it is needed in the future.
This is IRIB English Radio.
IRIB English Radio. With you every single moment.
اقرأ باسم ربك الذي خلق.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. يا أيها المزمل قم الليل إلا قليلا نصفه
أو انقص منه قليلا أو زد عليه ورتل القرآن ترتيلا
فدعوتك ربي بقرآني جنبني حراني.
Let's recite the Quran.
ناجيتك أرجو غفرانك يا من ينجينا إحسانك ودعوتك ربي بقرآني.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين وصلى الله على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين
اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد وعجل فرجهم.
السلام عليكم ورحمة الله. Respected brothers and sisters, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, welcome to Let's Recite the Quran Kareem. Inshallah, today we will talk about two verses in Surah An-Nisa, Ayah 39 and Ayah 40 on page
85.
Brothers and sisters, turn to page 85. Dear listeners, Ayah 39 and 40 of Surah An-Nisa. Let's everyone, first and foremost, at the very beginning, listen to the recitation.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. وماذا عليهم لو آمنوا بالله واليوم الآخر وأنفقوا مما رزقهم الله وكان الله بهم عليما إن الله لا يظلم مثقال ذرة وإن تك حسنة يضاعفها ويؤت من لدنه أجرا عظيما.
Amazing. Nice recitation, mashallah. Allah bless the reciter, inshallah. So, what is Allah Almighty saying in these two verses? Very important. Very important point I have to mention here for you. Brothers and sisters, shortly we'll mention, then inshallah, the details you yourself will move on today. Inshallah, the tafsir books, inshallah, learn there, okay? أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم وماذا عليهم لو آمنوا بالله واليوم الآخر وأنفقوا مما رزقهم الله وكان الله بهم عليما. Allah Almighty says a very beautiful thing. What harm would it have done them? Okay? Had they believed in Allah on the last day, what would have happened? What harm would have happened to them if they had believed in the day of judgment? It talks about the previous ayah. Look, in the previous ayah, Allah says, "وَالَّذِينَ يُنفِقُونَ أَمْوَالَهُمْ رِئَاءَ النَّاسِ وَلَا يُؤْمِنُونَ بِاللَّهِ وَالْيَوْمِ الْآخِرِ." Some there are people, okay, who like donate, but they don't care about Allah. They don't care about the day of judgment. They don't believe, actually. Okay, they don't believe. So, if they believed, yeah, they would do these things for the sake of Allah Almighty, yes? But they don't believe, so they don't care about Allah, so they don't do these things for the sake of Allah Almighty. So, Allah Almighty says, what if they believed? Would something bad happen to them? This is a very broad topic, okay? So, we shortly mention, so you can discuss it with the scholars. Look, Allah Almighty says, what harm would it have done them had they believed in Allah on that last day? وَأَنْفَقُوا مِمَّا رَزَقَهُمُ اللَّهِ and spent out of what Allah has provided them, and also make the intention would be for Allah. What would have happened if the intention was for Allah Almighty? Yeah? وَكَانَ اللَّهُ بِهِمْ عَلِيمًا Allah knows them well. For what? I'll raise a question. I want you, inshallah, to judge, okay? Okay, for what? Let's see. Look, I believe in the day of judgment. There is another person, he does not believe in the day of judgment. I donate, I help the poor for the sake of Allah Almighty. My intention is this. He as well helps, but not for the sake of Allah Almighty. Okay? I do my prayers, he does not. I do my fasting, he does not. Okay? I follow the teachings, the rulings of Islam, but he doesn't. Now, suppose the day of judgment does not happen. Okay? Does not happen. It doesn't exist. After we, like, when we die, it's all over. Who is harmful here? Me or him? He didn't believe. I believed. Me? No one. No one. Not me, not him. Because he didn't believe, so of course, the day of judgment. Look, two cases. First, let's suppose that the day of judgment does not happen. It's not a fact. It doesn't exist.
Wait.
So nobody is harmful here, yes?
If you did the work with the intention of Allah, did it make you happy?
It made me happy. Yeah. I had a happy life.
So if he didn't do it for the sake of Allah, the person, and he felt happy.
Yeah, we both had our happiness in this world.
Yeah.
And we died, okay? So the day of judgment never happened. And he was right. And I was wrong, but I enjoyed my life. He also enjoyed.
So the happiness.
Who is harmful now?
Mostly no one.
No one. But now the next case. What if I did my prayers, I did everything, and he didn't? I believed in the day of judgment in Allah Almighty. He didn't. So the day of judgment happened. Who is harmful?
Him.
Him. So basically, yeah. You believe in the day of judgment, okay? Even if it doesn't happen, you have not been harmful. Okay? So Allah Almighty says this. وَمَاذَا عَلَيْهِمْ لَوْ آمَنُوا بِاللَّهِ وَالْيَوْمِ الْآخِرِ. What harm would have happened to them if they believed in the day of judgment? Huh? While the day of judgment is a fact. Nothing. So this is a question that we really, like, makes us think about it a bit. Okay, next point in the next ayah. Allah Almighty says in the next ayah, إِنَّ اللَّهَ لَا يَظْلِمُ مِثْقَالَ ذَرَّةٍ وَإِن تَكُ حَسَنَةً يُضَاعِفْهَا وَيُؤْتِ مِن لَّدُنْهُ أَجْرًا عَظِيمًا. Allah Almighty never wrongs someone. Okay? Allah Almighty never disrespects someone's right. Look, if you have done a single good thing, Allah Almighty will give you the reward. إِنَّ اللَّهَ لَا يَظْلِمُ مِثْقَالَ ذَرَّةٍ. Allah Almighty does not wrong anyone, even to the extent of an atoms of weight. Okay? وَإِن تَكُ حَسَنَةً. And if it is a good deed, look, if you do a good deed, مَنْ جَاءَ بِالْحَسَنَةِ فَلَهُ عَشْرُ أَمْثَالُهَا. He will get 10 times rewards for that, for one action if you did it. Here also Allah Almighty says, وَإِن تَكُ حَسَنَةً يُضَاعِفْهَا. Allah will double it, okay? The reward. If you do. Okay? If you do a single good thing, respect in this world as well, and the hereafter as well. وَيُؤْتِ مِن لَّدُنْهُ أَجْرًا عَظِيمًا. And Allah Almighty gives from Himself a great reward to that person. قرآني نبض حياتي قرآني طهر ذاتي قرآني عصمة أمري قرآني طوق نجاتي قرآني نبض حياتي. How to learn Quran easy? What is the correct way to read the Quran? What is the correct way to learn Arabic and understand the Quran? Be with Let's Recite the Quran.
Inshallah, I really recommend you to refer to the Tafasir books, inshallah, for details. Now, Fawad and Ali Nasir, if you're ready, let's mention some important tajweed rules, inshallah, then we'll move on. Ready?
Yes.
Okay, let's move on. Thanks for cooperation, though. وَمَاذَا عَلَيْهِمْ. It really matters how you pronounce it, okay? How you pronounce what?
Dal.
Yeah, وَمَاذَا عَلَيْهِمْ. So it really matters, okay? How you pronounce what?
Dhal.
Dhal. Wamaza is wrong. Wamaza. And also the way you read this word. Wamaza. This is a questioning, okay? A question that really tells them to think about it. Wamaza alayhim. Wamaza alayhim. Says what? What harms, okay, can affect you if you believe in the day of وَمَاذَا عَلَيْهِمْ لَوْ آمَنُوا بِاللَّهِ. Whenever the word Allah like you see the word Allah, okay, there is a kasra right before the word Allah. Try to read the word Allah with an A sound. Am I right? بِاللَّهِ بِسْمِ اللَّهِ مِنْ مِنْ عِنْدِ اللَّهِ. These all are the examples for an A sound. Forward. What if we have not, we don't have a kasra, we have a fatha wal dhamma right before the word Allah. How do we pronounce the word Allah?
Heavily.
Heavily, with an A sound. Good job. Like what? Like, لَقَدْ مَنَّ اللَّهُ عَلَى الْمُؤْمِنِينَ إِذْ بَعَثَ فِيهِمْ رَسُولًا مِنْ أَنفُسِهِمْ. Okay, or for example, what? وَأَنفَقُوا مِمَّا رَزَقَهُمُ اللَّهُ. This way. Next one. وَكَانَ اللَّهُ. So the pronunciation of the word Allah is different. بِاللَّهِ.
Allahu. Look, one is pronounced with an A sound, the other one is pronounced with an O sound. It matters, yes? When to pronounce it. The rule simply says, if there's a kasra before the word Allah, pronounce it with an A sound. If there's a fatha or a dhamma, pronounce it with an O sound. Very simple. Next important rule here is the letter Jim, that tells you an important point about stopping, that you are allowed to stop or
continue.
Mashallah. Next, I